So I'm Michelle Debink, and I'll be presenting some data from a multi-site study that I'd like to acknowledge all the other research team members, the co-authors listed here. Lisa Martin happens to be here in the audience. The rest of the team could not be with us. But I'll be speaking today about coming out as an abortion provider, the parallels between abortion workers and LGBT-identified provider experience of disclosure management, stigma resistance, and resilience. And at first I thought, you know, I have no disclosures. At first I thought I wasn't quite sure how this fits in with healthcare reform and abortion access, but I think the argument can be made that when we talk about helping abortion providers to manage disclosure and stigma and these sorts of things, we're actually talking about the abortion care workforce, and we're talking about maintaining safe abortion provision by maintaining a good, strong abortion care workforce. So these are our learning objectives for the day. And I'll talk a little bit of background about abortion providers and stigma. As Jenny mentioned, there's a profound amount of stigma around abortion and abortion provision. Abortion providers in specific experience stigma in varying locations and situations. They can experience it on an individual and interpersonal level in interactions with family or friends or acquaintances. They can experience it on a community level in terms of where they go to worship or places where their children go to school. And they can also experience it in terms of policy and politics. That might be restrictive policy, for instance, might be insinuating that they, you know, for a want of a regulation that makes them do some sort of informed consent process, would not otherwise do a good informed consent process with their patients. Abortion work specifically is considered dirty work, which is a sociology concept that basically describes any work known that is socially, morally, or physically tainted. And we find this idea of abortion work as dirty work to be particularly important because work is a particularly salient identity in American society. So people feel a very strong connection to what they do for work, and we often bring it up in conversations. Well, what do you do for work, and where do you work, and what is that about, what is that like? So having a stigmatized work identity can be particularly troubling or something that needs to be managed. And with our work in our research team, we seek to understand how providers experience, interpret and manage work stressors, including the stigma associated with abortion work. And as I mentioned, this is important because of the impacts on human resources for abortion. So one of the ways that we do that is we designed something called the Provider Share Workshop, which is actually a 5-session facilitated group intervention that recently we have concluded conducting at 7 abortion provision sites across the country. This is intended to provide a safe space for providers to sort of discuss their work stressors, to connect with one another. And we utilize multiple expressive methods during these sessions, including artwork, journaling, storytelling, giving everyone the space to sort of speak their minds, be heard, and be responded to. During the multi-site study of this workshop, any employee with regular abortion care responsibilities was eligible to participate. We transcribed audio recordings of each workshop session, and we qualitatively analyzed these using Deduce, which is an online qualitative analysis software system. For the multi-site intervention, the Provider Share Workshop sample, we estimate that the uptake, and this is an estimated uptake because it's not exactly, we had the sites estimated the number of participants they thought would potentially be eligible, but because by the time they went through the eligibility process and then they went through the recruitment process, those numbers can kind of shift a little bit. We estimate there's about a 60% uptake of the intervention across all 7 sites between the number of people who would be eligible at any given site and the number of people who actually participated in the intervention, but that's a rough estimate. About 79 abortion workers participated in the study nationwide. The average age of the participants was 32, and the sample was 100% female. Participants identified their work roles as physicians, nurses, counselors, recovery room assistants, surgical assistants, managers, working in preparation and cleanup, and other job titles. Importantly, several of our sites were cross-trained, and so workers could choose multiple job types. Among those who provided data on their sexual orientation, which is particularly relevant to this presentation, 11 participants, 14%, identified as lesbian, gay, or bisexual. And so I'm going to go over some of our results from this particular inquiry about the similarities that providers generally and LGBT providers in specific identified with their challenges with coming out as abortion providers. So first, I'd like to point out that actually coming out was language that abortion providers and LGBT-identified providers use sort of across the board. It's very interesting to us that even in the very first iteration of this, a pilot workshop conducted at one site, there were people who said, you know, when I came out to my family or when I did this, and, you know, they would point across the table and say, oh, yeah, it is just like coming out when I was a teenager, you know, that kind of thing. And so they were pointing out these similarities of the process. Importantly, I think one of the important things to point out that people do when they're coming out is they use euphemistic language to test the waters with new acquaintances. And this is, I'm going to be pointing out similarities between the way abortion workers come out and the way LGBT-identified workers said that they came out as LGBT. One quote said, or one person said, I tell lots of people that I'm a medical assistant. And if they want to know more, I say that I work for Planned Parenthood. And then she went on to say that she doesn't ever actually identify herself as an abortion worker. She said sometimes that's because people just stop the conversation at, I work at Planned Parenthood. And otherwise, she said that's because they get off on other, she tries to steer the conversation to other things like birth control or prenatal care. And someone else said, I can't make myself say I work as an abortion provider. And she was like, right away. So I say, I'm a nurse at a gynecology office. It's outpatient, and we provide abortions. Not saying I provide abortions, but saying we provide abortions. So I sort of ease into it because I can't make my mouth say it straight away. I guess I'm kind of putting my toe in the water, but I'm not comfortable. Another parallel was that workers attempt to judge who may or may not approve of their work based on other social and behavioral cues. And one person said, I feel like with time in this type of work, you get conditioned to taking the temperature of people. And I guess you take into consideration a lot of things. For instance, I have a neighbor, and the people where I live are mainly conservative, and she's a professional and looks really conservative, so I was very afraid of telling her what I did. But she asked me, and I said I worked in a women's health clinic, and she said she knew that clinic, the neighbor did, and she said, well, I work for this advocacy organization for teens seeking bypass, and it was really refreshing. This person was completely relieved having judged this other neighbor inappropriately. And finally, workers feel at risk of essentialization and demeaning judgments with disclosure. And what I mean by essentialization is that by disclosing that you're an abortion worker, in the context of that conversation, that's really all you are. You become, instead of a whole person, you become just the person who provides abortions. So someone said, the time when I don't usually tell people what I do is when I just want to relax. Sometimes you want to separate yourself from that identity. And this person was actually speaking about being at a party and being cornered by someone who was actually pro-choice and only wanting to talk about abortion. And then another person said, when my sister-in-law found out what I did, that was her first gut reaction. I heard the wind blow out of her mouth and she said, but you're so nice. As if nice people don't work in abortion care. So I think these are things that, you know, you can see the similarities, the parallels between LGBT-identified people coming out to their friends, their family, their communities, and abortion providers coming out. And then we also wanted to point out that especially the LGBT-identified providers identified some very distinct differences in the coming out process for LGBT-identified providers versus providers who did not identify that way. And the first was that for LGBT providers, sexual identity feels more inherent to their personhood, and they feel more vulnerable on this point than they do on talking about abortion or abortion care. So one person said, I feel much better about being attacked about my views on abortion than I do about my sexuality. Absolutely. Just because I feel that someone could say the wrong thing to me about being a lesbian or being married to a woman, and I'm just going to burst into tears. I don't really know how to fight about that. And then the other piece that LGBT-identified providers mentioned was that they have multiple layering identities or layering stigmatized identities, and these present additional challenges to self-worth and stigma coping. And you can imagine this is somewhat along the lines of Zora Neale Hurston or intersectionality theory, where people with multiple identities, especially stigmatized identities, have to, it's greater than the sum of its parts. So one person said, I'm gay and an abortion provider and a woman, and basically I think I just have to be black and then I'd be at the bottom, you know? That sometimes feels so overwhelming to know that I'm really like the worst to so many fellow Americans. And another person said, I would never go up to someone and introduce myself as gay, and I don't necessarily live my life like I work in abortion care. That's my work, and then my life is my life. But sometimes you are that quiet person in the room that's like, can't talk about work, can't talk about my relationship. What do I talk about? Nothing. And then the other thing that came out was that people talked a lot about ways that they could find resiliency in the face of stigma. Importantly, they said that they can learn from each other about disclosure management. So one person said, "When I was younger and first got into working in this abortion clinic, I just hadn't figured out how I would tell someone. But the more experience that I have in this field and getting the stories of the other women that I work with have given me that maturing experience to know what I'm going to say or how I'm going to answer questions." So this woman was relating this to a younger employee at the same clinic who kept saying, "I just don't know what to say. I haven't figured out my response. I've only been working here for 3 months, and she said, I treat my job the way I treat my patients under HIPAA. Nobody knows that I work here because I don't know what to say about it." So finally, to kind of wrap things up a little bit, some of our findings from the workshop regarding these ideas is that providing context for abortion workers to share coming out stories and strategies for disclosure may actually foster some resiliency, giving a sanctioned, safe meeting space for these types of conversations about how do you talk about coming out to your families, to your friends, how do you navigate disclosure, giving a known space for that rather than just having it happen in informal context may actually allow providers to learn that the challenges of coming out are not unique, may help them forge new connections with coworkers, and it may embolden them to forge new connections with outside individuals, as this woman forged with her neighbor, who turned out to not be conservative and anti-choice. And one person said, in response to being asked about the workshop, "If we shared more with each other, maybe we would feel less burnt out at our jobs and be reminded that we're not completely alone in what we do and how we feel." I think the other important finding from this in terms of the similarities and differences between abortion provider coming out stories and LGB-identified providers is that LGB providers face challenges and important life experiences that may contribute to both resiliency and increased stress from stigmatization. So we've heard in the past that LGB providers will say, you know, "I feel like I had this experience coming out in high school, and so I draw on that experience as a way of being out about my abortion work because I don't want to feel like I'm holding any part of myself back." But again, we also have heard that they have these multiple layers of stigmatized identity, and so there's a little bit of a push and pull there. And then, because we always get asked about it, I'll take just like a minute to go into a little bit of conjecture about what some of these things can tell us in terms of how you could imagine lessons being learned from the pro-choice movement generally and the LGBT movement generally. In terms of fostering a stronger, more resilient abortion care workforce and moving forward on stigma reduction for the abortion care workforce. And so I think the thing that really jumped out at us from the data was the risk of essentialization, which is so salient to both LGB-identified folks in the sample and non-LGB-identified folks in the sample. And the risk of essentialization is really just related to the ability to isolate, demean, and discriminate individuals who are participating in abortion care. And essentialization decreases when we increase visibility and we humanize the people who are participating in that work. And just to make a few sort of conjectures, the LGBT community has had some success, and obviously this is still a work in progress, but has had some success in increasing visibility over recent years and thereby increasing the humanizing quality of folks who identify as LGBT. And there are some studies that suggest that changing attitudes surrounding marriage equality suggests that both a societal shift and individuals knowing that someone they know is gay are responsible for this change in attitudes. And so just sort of having people be out has been important. But I think two of the things that the pro-choice movement can particularly learn from the LGBT ally movement is the ways in which the burden and the risk of coming out has been lessened by the addition of allies to the LGBTQ movement. Often providers will say, "We don't see the allies." So, and it's not that there aren't allies for abortion work out there. I mean, many of us in this room probably don't directly provide abortion care, but we're sitting here talking about it because we feel that it's important. But abortion providers say, "Where are the people who support us but who don't do this work? You know, there's not a good sense of connection between those groups," in the same way that we could look at PFLAG, Parents and Families of Lesbians and Gays, offers an alternative view of people who identify as gay. So like when you hear somebody from PFLAG say, "This is my son, this is my daughter, this is my sibling, this is my parent," it gives them gives that person who identifies with that a sexual minority a greater more holistic human quality, and having allies come into the pro-choice movement and saying, this abortion provider is my sister, this is my daughter, gives them a humanistic quality. And I think related to increasing the human side of abortion providers, LGBT groups have also had some success and, again, continued challenges. They continue to challenge the notion of LGBT identity as a deviant lifestyle. So, for instance, changing the DSM diagnosis away from LGBT identity being a mental health disease. And I think abortion providers could benefit from more people sort of publicly claiming that their work as good work, that good people do this work. And this goes back to that quote from one of the participants' sisters-in-law who said, oh, but you're so nice. And another person said that when they told friends that they did abortion work, they said, but you're such a good nurse, as if somehow people seeking abortion care don't deserve inferior care. And so I think putting out there from an ally perspective, putting out there from a general perspective that good people choose to do this work for good reasons would actually be more humanizing. One of our research team members actually just published a paper on the idea of the conscientious provider, that conscientious objector sort of is a one-sided argument about who provides abortion care, that the conscientious people among us decide not to provide. They conscientiously object. But there are, in fact, hundreds of people who conscientiously provide, seeing it as a moral obligation to do this good work. And if we can make that argument as a movement, then people may be able to see that this choice of work is not always just a choice. It sometimes feels like a moral obligation, but whether a choice or a moral obligation is a good choice, is a right choice for these people to make. And I'll close with a quote that one of the participants said that really speaks to this idea. She actually was speaking in the context of having someone from her church come up to her and say, God doesn't want you to do this work. And what she said in response was that, I really feel like this is a place for me to serve in kindness and show love to people. And I think that that's kind of the idea that we're going for in this last bullet point. So with that, I'll stop. I'll acknowledge our funder, the Society of Family Planning, and the participants of the Providership Workshop, and one of our research assistants, Adam Byington. Thank you all.